Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, episode 38. Welcome back to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. In the 15 years that Anne Marie and I have been practicing at our small residential architecture firm, Five Cat Studio, we have seen much of our hardware and equipment come and go. We launched the firm with a single Dell workstation, a monster gigantic CRT monitor, I think it was like 100 pounds, and an inexpensive all-in-one scanner, printer, fax machine. Today, we're running all Apple computers and the fax machine is long gone. On this episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, I'm going to share all of my equipment, the whole long list of all the hardware and electronic equipment that we use to run Five Cat Studio on a daily basis. It's not fancy or cutting edge, but it's what we have to do what we do. So stay with me. This episode is sponsored by the Entrepreneur Architect Hybrid Proposal. It's the owner-architect agreement that I developed for my own residential architecture firm, Five Cat Studio. It's simple, it's straightforward, easy to understand, and it's very, very client-friendly. Over 100 architects have purchased the Hybrid Proposal video course, where I personally walk you through the proposal package step-by-step, page-by-page, and included with the course is a complete set of document templates, which you may download, modify, and start using for your own projects immediately. If you're interested in learning more about the Entrepreneur Architect Hybrid Proposal, head on over to entrearchitect.com/hybrid. So today I'm going to share all the hardware and electronic equipment that Anne Marie and I and the guys here at Five Cat Studio use on a daily basis to get things done. And if you're not a regular listener to the podcast or a regular reader over at the blog, let me just quickly tell you that in November, we moved from our 2,000 square foot studio over in Pleasantville, New York, into a home studio that's about 200 square feet. And we sent our staff to their own remote studios, and we work as a virtual studio now. And so we took all of the equipment and things like that over at the 2,000 square foot studio. We gave lots and lots of obsolete and unused equipment away, threw away a couple of things that weren't possible to be given away, and only the essentials came to the new studio. And when we got some of the things over here, like our big giant HP plotter, which was working fine in the 2,000 square foot studio, decided that it was no longer going to work in the new studio and collapsed and failed on us. And so we ended up getting a new plotter, and I'll talk about that later, what we have now to plot our drawings. But much of what was in the big studio did not make it to the small studio, and today we're running lean and mean. So I'm liking it better, and I'm going to go through the list here sort of in some sort of order that will make sense. I'm going to start with the pre-design process that we go through, and when we do existing conditions, what we use to do that. I call existing conditions, I call it the existing conditions survey, and I use ECS for short. So when we're talking to one another here at the studio, we're often referring to the ECS. It is also referenced in the hybrid proposal as the pre-design service, and it's called the existing conditions survey under pre-design. One of the most valuable tools that I ever bought, I probably purchased it over a dozen years ago, was a laser distance meter. I have the Disto Classic 5 by Leica Geosystems. I don't think that the Classic 5 is available any longer. It is quite old, over a decade I purchased it. They do make a Classic 5A, which is the new version of the one I have, but they also have a tremendous selection of other devices that are great for measuring distances. I still use a handheld measuring tape for the areas that the laser distance, you know, small areas that the laser distance meter isn't really appropriate for. But it actually does a pretty good job. Pretty much anything 8 inches and over can be measured with the laser meter. And I can measure an entire house by myself using that tool, a pad, a pen, and my tape measure. So, and then if you are a listener, you know that I'm a really good I'm very good at measuring existing conditions because that's how I started my career. I spent an entire summer measuring over 300 condominium units with no laser distance meter. That was 20 something years ago. And they probably had them, but we didn't have them. I had a measuring tape and a pad and some pens, and I went to work and had a full-time job when I got done with that job. So I do talk about that in another episode. You could search that over at the blog and find my early career and some of the history there and that story about how I measured those units and how I got my first job. So the laser distance meter, Disto Classic 5, is the first tool, the first piece of equipment that I'm going to talk about. The second one, which I believe many of you probably already have in your pocket, is my Apple iPhone 5. During pre-design, during the existing condition survey, I'm using the camera on the iPhone 5, which I love. I use the iPhone for so many things now. It's become... It's virtually in my hands constantly. I gave my old Canon digital camera to my kids. I don't use a standard camera anymore. I would like to buy an SLR camera, which is in the plans, DSLR. But that's down the road, not a high priority, but I would like to do that and start taking some of my own pictures, professional, quality pictures. I'll have to get my brother Scott, who does all my photographs now. If you're looking for a good architectural photographer, and he travels, he's not cheap though, but he's very good. He shoots all of my work. You can look him up at scottlepage.com, and he does all our photos for our website. You can check many of the photos on 5cat.com are shot by Scott LePage. So check him out. The camera on the iPhone has 8 megapixels, which is actually more than my old Canon. I think my old Canon was a 5 megapixel camera. I know that new cameras are crazy megapixels, but I'm not sure once you get past a certain level whether it really matters, especially for existing conditions. You don't need a super high resolution. Although the nice high resolution images do allow you later while you're doing design to zoom in at a certain area on that image, which is really helpful sometimes where, you know, it's a larger image of something else, but it captured the area of the room that you're looking for, and you can zoom right in and see a detail. I love the panorama feature on it, so I can take wide views of an entire elevation. It has a great flash. It also has geotagging, so you can actually set it to tag the location of where you took those photographs. So you can have that all your photos tagged with that automatically with the location of where they were shot. And of course, the iPhone also is great for video, for those occasions where the still photos just may not suffice to tell the whole story. We're actually right now in a situation where we have a client that is on the other side of the world on vacation, and we're starting a new project with a great contractor. They did full demolition, and this week we found out that under all the plaster was a disaster of framing errors and botched framing and with plumbing holes in the floor, and it's really, really bad condition. And the photos, we took lots of photos of it, and we're putting together a report to send to the client. But I think I may also shoot a video of it, because I think it may actually better tell the story. I'd be able to narrate while I'm shooting the video to explain to them where the problems are and why much of the existing framing that we thought was going to be able to stay, like it is in a typical project, in this case, it's literally unsafe and needs to be removed and replaced. So I think the camera with the video will be great for that situation. So I still prepare my field sketches by hand with a pad and my collection of color-coded pens. So it's still sort of old school with my hand sketches. I'm sure many of you still do it by hand. But there are many devices and many devices and software available to capture existing conditions for architecture now. But I'm just not ready for that yet. I haven't fully researched it yet, so I don't really know a lot about it. But the little bit I know about it, I'm not yet convinced that technology is there that can be as accurate as my measurements with a laser measuring device and a measuring tape. I know that that's probably going to change very soon. I think that the technology is probably going to catch up very quickly if it hasn't already caught up, and we just don't know it, or I just don't know it. I would love to be able to walk into a room with a device, push a button, and have it scan the room and plot it out into CAD. Because right now, after we measure onto our pads by hand with pencil and pen, we're going back to the studio and transcribing all those field notes to CAD, which is not exactly efficient. We've actually tried in the past to bring a little folding table and a laptop and actually run CAD right there. It takes a lot longer to measure the space, but when you're done, the CAD files are all complete. We don't do that anymore because it is extremely time-consuming on site, and lots of times we'd rather just get in, measure it, and get out. But we have tried that, and it does work. But you can't really do that when you have an owner-occupied space and got to take like 2 days to finish measuring a house, where you can probably finish it by hand with a sketch pad in a half a day. We're using AutoCAD LT 2013 for Mac, and I wrote a podcast episode about the software we're using and the process that we go through with drafting and design using that software. And I highly recommend that you go visit that episode and listen. It's entrearchitect.com/episode29. The title is BIM Sanity, and I compare my AutoCAD LT 2013 for Mac to the BIM programs that are out there. And I question whether BIM, which so many people talk about as really the way we should be moving our design processes, and I compare AutoCAD LT to BIM. And in the comments, don't miss the comments, because the comments, both on the blog and over at the LinkedIn group, were exceptional. Great conversation about the pros and cons of BIM software for small firms. So I would recommend that you go check that out. So my next category is design. So after we measure it all up and we get it into AutoCAD, I want to talk about the big heavy duty stuff that we're using to basically run the studio. I'm going to start with design and the main computer. My main computer and monitor, it's integrated, is a 27-inch Apple iMac, which I purchased. It was actually technically a Christmas present from Anne Marie to me, but it was something we needed. For a long time, we were running Dell machines over at the other studio, and for the past year or so, I was using my MacBook Pro as my main computer, which was working, but it wasn't great. I had, and I was using another monitor, which I still use, and I'll talk about in a second. But I got the 27-inch Apple iMac. It's got a 3.4 gigahertz Intel Core i5 processor, super fast, love it. I know the new ones are even faster. It's got 8 gigabytes of memory, and I run it at 2560 by 1440 resolution. So it's really high resolution. I can fit a lot on my 27-inch monitor, and I love it. I absolutely love it. When I did that, that was the end of Dell. We slowly integrated from Dell to Mac. It took about 2 years to slowly integrate everything that we were using from Dell over to Apple. For about a year and a half, we were sort of integrated. We had some Apple, some PCs, and they were communicating. It wasn't great and it wasn't seamless, but it was working and it did what it needed to do. And that can be done. But now we are all Apple. I'm using an Apple wireless mouse and an Apple wireless keyboard, both of them connected to the iMac via Bluetooth. And I love that too. So I can pretty much work from anywhere in the room. And because the Apple iMac, the 27-inch monitor, is so large, I don't need to be right up against it. And then I actually have three monitors, working. I have the main iMac right in front of me. To my left, I have a ViewSonic VX2250, which is an LED monitor, a 1080p full HD monitor, which is what I was using when I was using the MacBook Pro. I was running it through that ViewSonic monitor. It was great when I got it. It's pretty old at this point. And it's seen its day. It's starting to occasionally flick off black and come back on and then go back off. And that gets frustrating. It doesn't do it all the time, but it's doing it. And then to my right, I have a third monitor, and that is the last remnant of the old Dell days. It's a Dell E198FP. Basically, I think it's a 17-inch monitor. And I had that from an old administrative computer that my office manager used to use, the old Dell machine. I saved the monitor so I can use it. And let me explain how I use these three monitors. The main 27-inch iMac that's right in front of me, I use for my, the task that I'm working on at hand. So if I'm running AutoCAD, that's the monitor that the AutoCAD's running on. If I'm doing email at the time, that'll be right in front of me. So whatever I'm working on is right in front of me on the high resolution iMac. To my right, my Dell monitor, is basically a static monitor. I use it for to keep my calendar up. And I also use Nozbe project management software. N-O-Z-B-E, Nozbe. And I can go into Nozbe another day on another podcast. If you're interested, go check that out. It's actually a really good way to sort of manage your projects. But I have Nozbe, and I have my iCalendar, straight up Apple iCalendar, open all the time on my monitor to my right. So I always have access to my calendar and my Nozbe, so I know exactly what I need to do next. and my calendar, which I have everything scheduled every day, what I'm going to do, pretty much hour by hour. To my left, the ViewSonic monitor, I use that sort of as an overflow monitor. So whatever I'm working on the iMac, if I want to have something else open, like my Twitter app, if I can follow my friends on Twitter, I can have that open over there. I can have my email open over there if I want to, although I try not to do that because it's distracting. The Twitter also is often distracting, so I'll often shut that down when I'm trying to get something done. But if I'm working on two different things at the same time, I'll have that other software open on that ViewSonic monitor. And that way it allows me to use the entire monitor screen for the task at hand, which works really well. I love having three monitors. And certainly the next purchase is going to be to replace these two old monitors. They're really the oldest equipment I have in this studio right now. And they're very low resolution, and they're failing. And so I would love to get two 27-inch Apple Thunderbolt displays that match the iMac. They're about a grand each, so I'm not sure that's going to happen, but that's really what I would love. I would love to have two 27-inch monitors, so I essentially have three 27-inch monitors. I know that's probably geeking out a little bit over my monitors, but when you have it all set up like this, it's so easy to do what you need to do. So that's it for basically for my computer and the monitors that I'm using. Let's get into printing. I have this is one of the survivors from the old Pleasantville studio. It's an HP Color LaserJet CM1312 NFI multifunction printer. It's a network printer. It has all the Macs can access it wirelessly. I have it set up through my server, which I'll also talk about in a little while. It's a Mac Mini, so the Mac Mini is hooked up to my printer, and I can access my printer wirelessly from anywhere in the studio or in the house that's connected to the studio. The LaserJet CM1312 is a scanner and a copier and a fax machine. I never actually set up the fax machine for that unit. Even when it was over at Pleasantville, I had a separate fax machine. I use it strictly for copying and scanning, and it always worked great. I never had a problem with it ever. It's a laser printer, so it uses the big toner cartridges. It's not exactly inexpensive to run, but it's been durable. It's a workhorse, so it owes me nothing at this point. I've had it probably for I would say close to 10 years, maybe eight, nine, maybe 10 years, and it's done a great job for me. The next thing I'm going to talk about is the plotter. I mentioned before that I had an HP. Well, I didn't say what I had, but I had an HP. I believe it was a HP 800 24-inch plotter, which was great. We rebuilt it a bunch of times. It was way over 10 years old, probably close to 12 years old, maybe closer to, we bought it when we got the studio, so it was about 11 years old. And it did a great job. We did have to rebuild parts of it a few times. I think the repair guys wanted some big dollars for it, so John Whalen, my associate, and I had pulled it apart a couple of times and ordered some parts. One time I ordered a part from HP, and I believe they built it in China when I ordered it, and it took like 2 months to get, which was extremely frustrating. But we did rebuild it, and it worked for a long time. And then I lugged it from Pleasantville all the way over to Chappaqua on the moving truck, and when I got it here, I set it up and it died, and I wasn't about to rebuild it again in the middle of the move. And so I did get it sort of working, and I put it on Craigslist, and I told the guy that it needed to be rebuilt, and somebody came and bought it for like $100 and took it away. So today what I did is I replaced it with an HP T520, which is a much smaller plotter, still 24-inch roll feed plotter. It has full wireless, and it has remote access, so you can actually set it up to access remotely through the internet. I don't have it set up that way. I have it hardwired to my network. That's all I need it for. It does have full color, and it has, and it's pretty efficient with the use of ink, which is great, much better than the old 800, HP 800. So I'm really happy with the new plotter. It took a little bit of configuring to get it to work with the the AutoCAD LT 2013 for Mac. But we did, once I figured out the new format for AutoCAD 2013 and I understood the plotter, I got it working, and now it works really, really well. I'm just going to take a quick drink here. Okay. The next thing I want to talk about is the network server. I have an Apple Mac Mini server. It replaced my old Dell server, which we purchased when we moved into Pleasantville. The old Dell tower, which was gigantic. It was about a foot wide. It was about 2 feet, literally 2 feet deep, and probably about 20 inches tall. And it weighed so much. It was so heavy. The Mac Mini is about 6 by 6 inches by about an inch and a quarter tall. And it was much more powerful than the Dell ever was. And it has two hard drives in it. It basically can fit whatever I throw at it. And I have that set up as our main server. It's both our printer server and our file server. Although Dropbox, I'm using Dropbox now because we are a virtual studio. I'm using Dropbox for all our project drawing files. And I'm starting to use Evernote online. I have the premium version of Evernote for field notes and other documents that we're using Evernote for that, which has a great search engine in Evernote. So when you put something in Evernote, it actually converts it to searchable text. Or when you scan it, you can have it set up that way, and then it will search the actual text in the document, not only the tags that you tag it with or the title. So if you're looking for a specific document, you can search for what the subjects are in that document and it will find them. So that's why I love Evernote. But now, because I use Evernote and Dropbox, the Mini is slowly becoming an archive device. And I'm planning to set it up as a local backup hard drive. So it basically is a mirror of my iMac and my Dropbox files. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to no longer use it as the file server. I'm going to keep the files in the cloud, and I'm going to set up the iMac. Although I'm not sure how I'm going to do that. My friend Neil Pan, you can check out Neil Pan on Twitter at npan. He's a friend of mine, and he's also he recently launched Apple for Architects. Right now, you can follow Apple for Arch on Twitter for everything Apple for Architects. But he has some ideas as well for me, so I'm going to talk to Neil and see what I should do with my Mac Mini, and maybe purchase some other equipment to do what I wanted to do some backups. Let's see, my scanner. The next thing is my scanner. This is a fantastic device. I love this scanner. This is the Fujitsu ScanSnap IX500 scanner for PC and Mac. There's also an Evernote version of the same scanner. It's an Evernote branded version. I'm not really sure the differences. This is a wireless or USB connection. It's super high speed. I've never seen a home office scanner like this. run so quickly and very, very accurately. It self-corrects the skew. If you put the document in crooked, it'll fix it for you. It scans directly to email or Evernote or Dropbox in PDF format. It scans everything from little small little paper receipts all the way up to, you know, I think like 11 or 8.5 by 14 legal documents. It may even do bigger than that. I think A3 is the largest size that it will accept. But you can put all those sizes all in at the same time, and it'll scan it all and organize it for you automatically. I'm using it mainly for scanning paper documents, all my current paper documents and future paper documents, because I'm slowly migrating over to a 100% paperless studio. That's my goal. This week's subject, my newsletter to my subscribers at entrearchitect.com/newsletter. You can subscribe to the newsletter. It's free. It's called the Entrepreneur Architect Report. And every week I put together a letter to my subscribers about what I'm doing. And it also includes links to this week's podcast episode and this week's blog post, so you won't miss a thing if you subscribe. But this week's letter was all about my paperless studio. And as well as my blog post also was about the paperless studio. So you can check both the article as well as the newsletter and learn about my goals and my plans for the paperless studio. And in addition to, if you get the PC version of the Apple, PC version of the Adobe, if you get the PC version of the Fujitsu ScanSnap, it comes with Adobe Acrobat 10, the standard version. It's not available with Mac version. But you get a free copy of Adobe Acrobat, the full version of Adobe Acrobat, if you get the PC version of this scanner. So it's great. I'm really happy with that scanner. So next I want to talk about the tools that I use in the field. And so in addition to what I do when I do existing conditions, when I go to meetings, I go to project meetings or interviews, the tool now that I use, this is my newest device, is my iPad Air. I love my iPad Air. I got the Wi-Fi only version. I use my iPhone's personal hotspot for when I need internet. It's a little bit clunky and inefficient to have to flip on my iPhone and set up the hotspot to connect to Wi-Fi. But it also saves me $150 on the device, on the iPad, as well as the monthly service fees for the cellular service. So I think in the position that we are now, we're still trying to save money and build our retained earnings. So I saved $150 in the monthly service fees, and I got the Wi-Fi only version. I think if I had the money, I would go for the full cellular version, because it would be much more convenient to just flip it on and use it when you're not near Wi-Fi. I got the 32 gigabyte version, so I could load it up with pictures and podcast episodes, because I like to listen to podcast episodes. It's got a 9.7 inch Retina display, which is the same size as the standard iPad. The standard iPad's a little bit bigger, but it's really the size is in the case. The iPad Air is smaller than the standard iPad, and it's much lighter. It's super fast, and I use it for field notes right now. So when I go to a job meeting, I use my Evernote and I write my field notes right there. So I'm not handwriting my field notes and then transcribing them anymore. I'm putting them right into Evernote right from the iPad. I also have full access while I'm in the field to my Evernote. So if I have to go back to old notes, and I have access to my Dropbox, so if I want to go to my drawings, I don't have to carry the big roll of drawings anymore. I just carry my iPad Air. It has access, when I go to project interviews, I have access to my website and my portfolio photos. And it even has, The iPad has so many apps that you can use. My friend Andrew Hawkins, a few months back, wrote a great article over at the Entrepreneur Architect blog called The Top 5 Apps for Architects in Daily Practice. You should check that out for iPad and iPhone. Some of them are for iPhone as well, but it was basically an article about apps for your iPad for architects. You can find that at entrearchitects.com/5apps. That's the number 5 apps, APPS. So entrearchitect.com/5apps. That'll give you a link to the top 5 apps for architects in daily practice. You should check that out. And what I love most about the iPad is that it's replaced my old leather bag. You know, the old leather bag was full of pens, and it had my leather binder with my graph paper in it and my scale, and I had a folded up copy of the drawings in there, and it had the big thick project binder with all my documents. Now it's all accessed from the iPad. So instead of lugging around the big heavy bag, which sometimes I need it, you know, sometimes I'll need the scale or the pen. But I don't really carry the bag anymore. I really just run out with the iPad and I'm good to go. Everything that I need is in the iPad, or on my iPhone. You know, I it really does everything I need it to do. So that, you know, for Five Cat Studio, that's pretty much all of the equipment and hardware that we're running. All pretty simple stuff, nothing super high tech or cutting edge. It's probably similar to what you're using, but it's great. I really like the technology that we're using now. I think we've become much more efficient, and we'll only become more efficient as the software and the apps become more available to do the things that we want them to do. I think for a small firm architect, the devices that are available are inexpensive and very easily, very quickly, you know, very available, and really can do, can help you run your business better. The last thing I want to share with you is sort of a bonus. I want to get into Entrepreneur Architect a little bit and some of the devices I use for that. The first thing I use is my old MacBook Pro. It's a 15-inch MacBook Pro. That's the MacBook I was talking about before. I still love it, but really the iPad is taking over much of the former uses of the MacBook Pro. My kids are now also sort of trying to take over the MacBook, but it's still a tool that I use. For Entrepreneur Architect, I write most of my articles with the MacBook Pro. It allows me to have a full keyboard rather than the iPad. It has faster Wi-Fi and more easily connected. And it allows me to write wherever I want to write. You know, it allows me to go up into the living room or out onto the patio and be fully connected and write whatever I want to write there. I do all my evening social media updates typically out of the studio, and when I do that, I'm doing that on the MacBook. So I still use the MacBook, and I use it mostly for writing. I don't really use it very much for anything else anymore. The 27-inch iMac I also use, the same iMac that I'm using for Five Cat, I'm also using for Entrepreneur Architect. I'm using that for my podcast. I'm using that right now. I'm using that with GarageBand 6. I really don't like the interface with of the new GarageBand 10. I'm not really sure what happened to versions 7, 8, and 9 of GarageBand, but GarageBand 6 is what I'm using for the podcast. The new version of GarageBand is really designed much more for music production. I would love for them to come out with a dedicated podcast production software, Maybe they'll do that. Maybe they'll do a podcast version of GarageBand. So that's what I'm using the iMac for. So the next thing for Entrepreneur Architect that I'm going to share is my microphone. The microphone I'm using right now. It's a Blue Yeti. And I would say it's probably, from what I understand, it's one of the best USB microphones out there. It's very inexpensive. It's less than $100. And it has lots of options for, you know, recording patterns. You know, whether you're recording music or solo voice, or if you're speaking with a guest, you can have it set up so both sides of the mic will pick up the voice. Or if you set it to another setting, it'll, like I do now, it'll only pick up my voice that's right in front of it. So the sounds to my left and right and to in front of me are much lower volume than my voice. And so it picks up really what's only in front of it when it's set to this setting. And it's really, if you're interested in doing a podcast, it's really the only thing you need to get started, because if you have a Mac product, it comes with GarageBand. And you can get started right away if you're interested in doing a podcast. So if you are interested in doing a podcast, there are two great tutorials. I don't know the links right offhand. It just coming to me now. But you can go to Pat Flynn on YouTube. You can search it. I'll put a link to both of them on the show notes. But Pat Flynn has a great podcast tutorial about how to get started in podcasting, and Cliff Ravenscraft, the podcast answer man, also has an exceptional tutorial on how to set up a podcast. Both tutorials are completely free, and they give you step-by-step instructions on exactly how to get started. The Entrepreneur Architect podcast was started by listening to Pat Flynn's tutorial and doing what he was doing at the time. So thank you, Pat. Thank you for that. So that's my microphone, the Blue Yeti. Blue is the company, Yeti is the model. And then I would say I'd get back to the iPhone. You know, in general, in my life, the iPhone has become a tool that I cannot live without. It's not only my telephone, and my email, but it also has my calendar. I do all my daily social media, my Twitter account, at Entree Architect, my Facebook, facebook.com/Entree Architect, Instagram, also Entree Architect. All three of those platforms I'm on every day and contribute. I do blog updates and editing on my iPhone. I use the camera, like I said before, in the video. I access my Evernote and my Dropbox when I need to. I listen to audiobooks on audible.com, and I read Kindle books on my iPhone. And probably other than my email and my telephone, I would say the third, I would even say that after email, email's the number one thing that I use the phone for. I would say even before the telephone, I would say that listening to podcasts, I listen to about 35 different podcast shows. I don't listen to all of them every week, but I have 35 set up on my phone. And truthfully, I haven't listened to terrestrial radio in over a year. So between podcasts and Pandora for my music, I don't listen to the radio anymore. And I'm sure I'm not the only one doing that. And I do all that. All of that on the iPhone. I access my banking. It's so much that one device can do. It has literally transformed my life. I'm sure it's transformed your life. It's transforming society in both good and bad ways, obviously. But it's amazing. I can't wait to see what Apple does next, because we are now fully Apple. I have no more PCs in my house or my studio. I have pretty much every device that Apple makes, and that was not by intention. It just sort of happened. I have the iMac. I have the MacBook Pro. I have the Mac Mini. I have the iPhone. I have an iPad. Anne Marie has an iPad Mini. So we have almost everything they make, and I'm incredibly happy with the Apple products. And I'm not really didn't really intend this to be an Apple advertisement, but you know, like many people who start using Apple products, I'm really happy with them. So so that's my list. That's the equipment that I use on a daily basis at Five Cat Studio. And I'll include this whole list, list of all these items that I talked about over at the show notes. You can find the show notes at entrearchitect.com/episode 38. That's the number 38, episode 38. And I would love for you to go over to the blog and leave a comment. Tell me what equipment that you're using to get your work done. You know, whether it's new or old, cutting edge or run of the mill, the good, the bad, the ugly, I want to hear it all. Share all of your equipment over at entrearchitect.com/38. And with that, I'm going to wrap it up. Until next week, my name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. Thank you very much for listening.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.